forth. I heard the teratology meeting went very well, and that Kathy did a great job, as always.
That's true.
And the RSA meeting equally went well, and the FAST was very well represented. And I think Jill may have the numbers, but the symposium on imaging, facial imaging, I thought went very, very well. And Michael helped put that together, I guess, with Tatiana. And but I thought it was outstanding, and I think can lead the way for some of what we would like to probably accomplish over the next 5 years. In terms of, let's see, I just lost that train of thought that I was going to go, but some of you who were not at the RSA meeting and intend to publish an RFA or an RFP as fast, and why we haven't seen the actual RFP, that I'm assuming, and Dale confirmed previously, that the deadline for submission will probably be sometime mid-December, and then it'll be reviewed in the spring. And so we are on a timeline to try to get this done, and I think that we'll discuss some of the issues about the renewal on this call. But I'm hoping that over the course of the summer that we can have group discussions as well as small group discussions as we see how these projects are moving forward and how they can continue to move forward, whether or not they should be spun off into R01s. We're going to be looking for both new participants in CFAS. If you think there are any cutting-edge projects that we should consider for CFAS and you'd like me to have to contact people to individually to let them know about the opportunities that we have, please just email me who they are and what they do, and I will a personal invite to submit a one-page prospectus to us. And we also need to solicit developmental projects. We would like to get as many of those as possible and send those out for review. And I think they've been particularly strong in our previous applications and something that we would like to continue. So you can make little notes to yourself to send me cutting-edge researchers who might participate in CFAS either as a UO1 or as a developmental project. That would be great, and then I will be soliciting them. We're going to send out an announcement to the FASD study group, to the RSA, to ISBRA. And Tina or Ken, do you think teratology would be an appropriate outlet to announce the availability of or the solicitation of these applications?
Yeah, absolutely.
All righty. Bill, remind me about that. All right. I'm sorry.
I just said yes.
Okay. The budget for the renewal is going to be flat, so one needs to remember that if we add projects, we are going to either cut into the budgets of other projects or eliminate projects. And the Science Advisory Board and NIAAA and I are going to meet to discuss current budgets and current where these projects are going in the very near future. And there may be some modifications or scopes, but I think probably what I'm envisioning is talking to each PI after we can review the progress reports and publications and things like that, and then try to get in touch with each of you to see what your upcoming plans are and maybe help to shape some additional integration between projects. Charlie Goodlett, who recently reviewed one of the INYA applications, which is similar to the CFAS, said that the review committee was very interested in the accomplishments of each project and how those accomplishments were enhanced by being a member of a consortium like Endeavor. So that's something I think that each of us needs to consider. Anyone have any ideas about how the structure or how we should go about? I hope everyone's going to be around over the summer so that we can have some of those calls. And Jill will be sending out Google polls and all that stuff to try to figure out times. But again, we have to try to integrate projects. As I've said at the RSA meeting, I think we would be hard-pressed to justify just continuing what we're doing. I think we need to kind of focus our approach, and as Faye Calhoun said at the meeting, kind of they're interested in things that that we can use, news that we can use, is how Faye put it. And so I think we need to think in each of our projects how we can enhance the lives and what we can to take our research and translate it into the human realm. But I don't think, you know, just saying we're going to collect more behavioral data, more of the same behavioral data on additional kids, or more just brain images on additional kids, is going to really do that well in review. And what we really need to do is to think how we can expand our projects in new directions, and what we've learned from them, and where does that lead us. Michael, any other comments on that?
No, you've summarized it nicely.
Bill or Dale?
I guess I would just embellish a little bit and say, you know, maybe we need to figure out what three focus areas, you know, that make it clear to the reviewers what this is all about, and, you know, around which, you know, the projects can take shape. And in terms of the collaborations, you know, think about how you can demonstrate the collaborations up till now. I think the reviewers will be looking for that, and going forward as well, obviously. And I think the collaborating pieces of the puzzle would want to echo those in each of the respective grants so that the message comes out.
In terms of logistics, like I said, I think we need to meet in small groups. And what I'd like everyone to consider is we restructured CFAS between the first iteration and the second in some positive ways, and also some ways that didn't appear to work out very well. We used to have a lot of cores. We don't have many cores anymore. And we converted some cores to projects. And some of the projects now have lots of subcontracts, and subcontracts have subcontracts. And for many people, that hasn't worked out very effectively. And so we need to start thinking about how we can restructure the next iteration of CFAS to be better integrated, more productive, with fewer hassles. So I would like to entertain any and all ideas that people have about that. I'm not expanding our cores very much, although I think we need to consider new ways of trying to integrate the 3D project now that Hammond is, I guess, joining, or is one of the projects that has a high priority for joining CFAS right now. He's been continued for the next year with a budget, so hopefully He gave a great talk at the RSA meeting, and we need to think about whether we want a facial imaging project or a core, how Tatiana and Peter are going to integrate, because, you know, this is Tatiana's project, is the 3D project, and I don't want her to feel that she's being in any way displaced or affected by Peter, who's going to do the more analysis type of things, the type of things he does. I think Peter's, you know, on board now about all that, so hopefully that'll work out. But any ideas that people have, I would love to hear them about how their projects could be restructured to work more effectively.
Can I say one thing, Ed? It's Tatiana. Can I interrupt you, or is that okay?
Yeah, I said yes. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. So what I was going to say actually is a broader question, which is, you know, some of the ways to pick up more cores as compared to projects is also thematic. So if you have certain themes that you're addressing, then cores support those themes. And then, you know, I think it's hard to say what's a core, what's a project without knowing kind of what the broader themes are. And I don't know if it's the same rule here, but typically cores have to support multiple projects. At least that's how it works in a PPG. I don't remember what the instructions were the last time. So I think part of this, and I would actually completely agree with you, I think you want to put everything on the table and see how different things fit with each other, and then potentially revisit again the question of what fits best as a core versus a project. And those things that interact and provide support to multiple different areas are potentially more appropriate as a core. And I would say that would be very much true with facial imaging. The more that gets spread and interacting with more different areas, the more appropriate it is to potentially be a core. And I would just say I think we want to view a lot of things in that way and think of it as an organizational. It's not it's how to make things fit together and make sense to a reviewer. And I don't know if that's helpful at all.
It is. You know, Peter is invited to this by Precise.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't speaking necessarily specifically about facial imaging. I was trying to put this into a broader context where I think you just want to ask everyone, you know, where are your themes, what are you asking, and where do you see common tools being used? But that's what I was trying to suggest.
Yeah, I agree. But in a more specific comment about the facial mm-hmm. imaging is it's been my experience that people who have a track record of writing NIH grants just write a better NIH grant. And some would have, Peter has not done this. He's been part of NIH grants, but I don't think he's ever been a PI on a component. And so it would require extensive, I think, you know, they do things differently in the UK with grants. It's a lot based on personnel. And you know, at NIH, the investigator counts for almost nothing. You know, it's the science that's the important driving factor and how that's presented. And so it would require, you know, a lot of additional work to, I think, get that application. Not that he couldn't do it, but I think he's going to need direction from someone who has more experience in doing it than he does, if that makes sense. So I think the structure of that has to be really thought out well and planned. But I agree with you about dealing with cores as providing resources to multiple projects. And I think we need to restructure because some things have not worked out well from this last iteration. Or it's not that they haven't worked out well; it's that they haven't worked out as well as perhaps they could have. And some people feel, you know, that if they're the second subcontract, that they really have very little control. Things just take too long to get done. So need to rethink the structure. One of the things that I am considering, and we talked about it on the basic science call, is to have an educational component somewhere, either as a core or as part of the administrative core, to try to. What?
Can everyone hear me or no?
I can.
Well.
Oh yeah.
Oh, because Jill was saying, came in to tell me I needed to talk closer to the mic.
Yes, you do.
All right, an educational core where we can get the information that we've been collecting out into the public on a more regular basis. So to change the not change the focus, but to integrate a P60 like educational component. And I would like ideas about that. I think Kathy Sulik had some good ideas on this morning's call about getting a larger web presence and trying to make the information that we collect more generally available to others who want to use it, as well as to the general public. So any ideas about that would be appreciated as well. And what am I forgetting?
Intervention prevention.
Yes, they came up this morning, too. It is unlikely that, given the stagnant budget that we have, that any large prevention study is going to make it into the final thing. It's the budgets are going to be flat, and Phil, what's a prevention study cost?
Well, it depends. What you're saying then is small efficacy studies of interventions might be more appropriate, correct?
Right. Then yeah, I think the large prevention ones are, you know, better suited for a large RO1 type of project.
Right.
You know,
but in terms of taking a specific aspect of fetal alcohol syndrome development, for example, and doing a efficacy trial with a couple of case control samples, that would be okay?
Yeah. They would have to be reviewed. When I say review, I mean, in the past what we've done is to have the Science Advisory Board, an external review committee, look at applications and kind of rank them as for importance in the CFAS.
Sure.
And after that, yeah, but I think that those might work out well. I think Jim Reynolds in Canada is a good example of targeted interventions that they can do on relatively modest budgets.
Right.
So I see those as, you know, as certainly something to be considered.
Thank you.
All right. Any other issues, comments? Concerns.
What kind of interventions were you considering?
I think that's up to people to decide where they think the more cutting edge types of interventions. I think to demonstrate that an intervention that, you know, I think people are willing to assume that interventions that work with other disorders work with FAS is probably pretty reasonable. You know, that almost any intervention works with almost anybody. So that's a gross generalization, but.
How about wheel running?
Jeff Wozniak was also interested in the consortium.
Yeah, no, I know Jeff is interested. We've hung up a flyer at the RSA meeting. We've gotten some inquiries from other people who would be interested. I think the interventions would have to be somewhat novel and unique. But that's just my opinion. I didn't serve on the review committee last time, so.
Well, speaking of review committees, it would be important if there are intervention components to the next proposal that we get a stronger representation of people who can speak to that area. Both of the review committees we've had for CFAS have been really not very interested at all, if not hostile to prevention.
Or intervention.
Pardon? Yeah, intervention.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of input into who the reviewers are.
Well, I'm speaking to the, we have three NIH people on the phone, so.
Yeah, I'm assuming that they, I'm hopeful anyway, that when they are considering reviewers, they consider some of the people we had last time, and to be included in some that they would not invite back. So, I think some of the reviewers last time were very fair and just, and others were maybe a little more critical, but we did good, so.
I also would expect that, you know, they would look, take a look at the applications and see what expertise would be needed and fill in as needed.
But Phil is right, and I forget which one it was. There was no representation and a group that was not very receptive.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That was true of both the committees, the first and the second, at least as far as the interventions proposed. And I'm, you know, obviously I'm speaking as an interested party, but there were some objective parties from NIAAA who expressed some of the same concerns.
Did I just lose somebody? Can everyone hear?
That is regarding intervention.
Oh, all right. My phone went out for a second, so.
So in terms of molecular interventions, you know, I think choline's, you know, being covered already with Tina's study. And maybe there's another type of intervention with choline that could be considered, but and there's a lot of other potential molecular interventions, but I'm not sure they've been adequately worked through the animal level. Correct me if I'm wrong, but so there might be a role for the basic scientists with some, you know, potential interventions, molecular interventions other than choline.
Well, you had the Sal and Knapp was part of
right
Bond's project this time around in mice.
Right.
And Jennifer, of course, had choline component too.
Yeah, obviously, and Jennifer's work has created the foundation and has allowed people to go forward in the clinic, and that's just starting with Jeff's project, Jeff Wozniak's project, and perhaps there's another going, I'm not sure.
Well, but I think that Phil's, you know, is now in North Carolina. He's working with a top-notch group of people in nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a population to study. So it's irrespective of the choline data. I mean, I think that there are other nutritional interventions that would lend themselves to FASD. And so I think there are opportunities there that Phil might want to, maybe that's what you're talking about, Phil. I don't want to put words in your mouth. But.
Yeah, that's part of it, plus behavioral as well.
So, you know, I do think, and Tatiana, I wanted to ask you, I got your email, but I was racing between conference calls, so I didn't read it carefully.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that you have some opportunities as well that you would like to propose as kind of a new area?
So as most of you know, so we've got a GWAS that's right now being done at CIDR. And so following the meeting, I actually got an email from David Goldman, who wanted to know if we'd be interested in doing some sequencing. And he was proposing maybe 500 genes. And so I actually was waiting until after this call to write him back. But my inclination is to say that I think it'd be hard at this very moment to propose, you know, what 500 genes. But I think based on the GWAS, I think we might have some genes. And I don't know if this would be of interest to the broader group, but depending on what we wanted to focus on, if it was FAS, you know, if we're more interested in imaging, depending on where we want to go, potentially we could also propose to do some partnering for example, like with PASS that has, you know, some kids with FAS, and if we wanted to try to get a pure data set in which to do sequencing if we wanted to do that. So, I mean, it's very much a work in progress. The key to it is he's proposing it actually for a relatively small amount of money, which I could imagine could maybe get distributed maybe across 2 years, and it was about $50,000, I think $55,000. So if that could be spread across 2 years, it potentially could be something that would be different, would I think, take advantage of some of our resources. I mean, I'm in the very early stages to see if this is even reasonable, and I'd want to see our GWAS data first before going much further. But it'd be a very subsidized sequencing.
Yeah.
So it's a developmental project.
Pardon?
As a developmental project.
I mean, it could potentially – I don't remember what the dollar amount is. Maybe it could even fit into something like that potentially.
Well, it would. The only problem is that if this is reviewed, it would be – you wouldn't get anything done then until next August. It would when it would be starting. And I got the impression that David was, like, ready to do this.
I think he was. I mean, I that's where I want to flesh out with him a little bit more what his timeline is, because I really think you want to see the GWAS results first. And they've already done their pre-testing on all of our samples. They have a small number of questions on, I think, 5 or 6 samples that we're clarifying right now with them. And I think we want to see those results. I mean, I'm cautious. I don't want to commit to something. I want to use that resource wisely. So, I mean, it's an initial email. I want to pursue it a little bit more and get more detail from him.
All right. And the results of this GWAS, and I know you don't know what they are yet, but do you think that they have a reasonable chance of forming the basis for a UO1?
I mean, again, it depends. So most of you, I mean, we've talked about this on the call. So we chose everybody who had brain imaging that we had saliva on with the idea that that probably was going to be the most hypothesis-generating set of samples. Then we went down and selected all the individuals who might not have had brain imaging but had neuropsych, again, thinking that that would be the next logical place. So I think depending on what you see, I'm expecting anything we found to be probably tentative and needing replication. So I think it could form the beginning of a UO1. It could, with particular focused hypotheses.
And do you think you'll get the results back soon enough to be able to do that for a December deadline?
A UO1, you mean?
Yeah.
Yes, because, I mean, so we've pushed that the GWAS results, we need them this summer because we have to be able to have time to analyze them, and I think everyone wants to be able to play with them. So I think it's possible. I mean, I think it would be, I mean, that obviously is something that would have to be done in collaboration. I mean, I'm not the one developing the phenotypes, but I think if people want to go in that direction, like if Elizabeth Sal, I know she's got a lot of interest in imaging and putting some genetics with it, I could see that definitely forming potentially part of her renewal or something in collaboration, and that would be a good use of potentially core and a project. I'm sorry to sound vague, but without knowing the whole framework of how, that's why I think seeing what themes people want to pursue, I think, would really help see how this could be well integrated.
Well, that's what we want to do, is to have these small group meetings between PIs and Science Advisory Board and NIAAA to try to develop those themes and direct projects in ways that would be improve the integration. You know, we've been very productive, but one of the issues is that if you look at projects that have been cite more than one grant, more than one U, we could improve that. And so, you know, I think we need to speak individually with PI about their projects after we consider them in total, the progress that has been made and what's going on in each of the areas, and then try to develop the themes. And we've done some of that already with the facial imaging and the animal studies and the human studies, you know, to develop that as being one of those maybe three key things that Dale was talking about.
And I would just say to that effect, just not to belabor it. So one of the things I did after RSA is I did a first draft of putting the mouse and the human data, and actually that's now with Fungzo and actually with the Jacobsons to take a look at. And then it's going to circulate more broadly, precisely to address the question of going cross species and crossing different projects. And I know I followed up with Rob Lipinski and Peter Hammond because that's going to be really critical again for cross projects. So I think we did a timeline at our place, and basically you have to write the paper this summer if you want to have it in press by the time this thing gets reviewed.
Yeah.
So all those cross-project things have to come to fruition this summer.
Right, and progress is going to be something that's considered in including papers or including projects in the renewal, and we have to do what's best for them. So one of the topics that has come up is auxiliary sites, and this would involve Ken Jones. We've been approached by a number of groups who are utilizing or would like to utilize, you know, the dysmorphology type forms that we have, that we utilize in CFAS, some of the neurobehavioral tests that we're doing, and they're not asking us for any money. They're kind of asking us for access to resources that we've developed, and we've been doing that on a regular basis. The WHO is, I think, using dysmorphology core forms in the proposal that they're putting out to third world countries. They're using some of the behavioral tests that Sarah's put together. And we've been approached by Scotland, Canada, or Croatia, the Australians and people in New Zealand about kind of being an auxiliary site. And I see that as potential to use our core resources to help out these other countries and other projects, as well as perhaps have in the number of subjects that we could have access. It would be dependent, however, on the dysmorphology core willing to take on that role in training people and also to go to those sites to verify the diagnosis. So, Dr. Jones, that's something you're willing to consider?
It's certainly something I'd be willing to consider.
Would you consider making a video of a dysmorphology exam?
I would. I don't think it would be very worthwhile, but I'd certainly be willing to consider doing it.
Am I good or am I good? Huh?
Good.
I predicted that on this morning's Basic Science Conference call.
I think that we've had enough experience standing up in front of a group of people showing them how to do a dysmorphology examination for the fetal alcohol syndrome. It doesn't work. You really have to work one-on-one with people and then have them do it and you do it and them do it and you do it. And
I couldn't agree more, which is why I knew that, you know, this would be something that you would do, but something that you would have questions about its utility.
Right. Well, you were right, Ed.
And I think we all agree that, you know, you're not going to teach someone to be a dysmorphologist with a web broadcast, you know, a YouTube video type thing. But we all think that that would also be important just for people to see how we go about doing it.
Right.
Don't create a dysmorphologist, but you might help a dysmorphologist make that next step.
Well, you might help a pediatrician make that next step. All the dysmorphologists know Ken. So,
right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would just use this case in point, the study that we did in Russia with the pediatricians over there. And using what I just suggested, you can teach somebody to do this, and we demonstrated it. Now, things that happened in Ukraine, where we have been able to teach a pediatrician to do, and geneticists to do, a physical exam for the fetal alcohol syndrome that really is spectacular. They can both do a great job with it. So I think this can be done. I'm not sure about the video, but we can sure try.
As long as you'll entertain the idea, we're good.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And I think it'd help our public image, too. So, am I, John, you're, we're on both calls. Am I missing anything here?
No, I don't think so. I think that the summary that you, Michael and Dale put together at the beginning outlined everything, and what I'd like to emphasize from that is the need to try to demonstrate as soon as possible how what you've all done was only possible because the consortium existed. And that's, I was terrific to hear Tatiana talking that there's a manuscript already working to go multidisciplinary there on the face. That's exactly the kind of thing that's going to be necessary to demonstrate good progress. That's really all. I don't think you missed anything.
Bill or Dale?
I'll let Bill have the microphone.
Yeah, off the top of my head, I can't think of anything else, Ed. Thanks.
Michael?
No, that sounds like a good summary.
All right, so I think the next step then is for NIAAA and the Science Advisory Board and myself and Michael to get together and kind of discuss each of the projects and then get in touch with each of the PIs and perhaps have a group conference call on finding out what directions they're planning on going. The Science Advisory Board met for breakfast in the RSA meeting, and I think it was very useful to kind of discuss some of the issues that will be faced in a renewal, some of the concerns that people will have, and then I think we can have a few more of those conversations, discuss them with the PIs, and then try to draw in groups of PIs to move projects to be as integrative as possible. So I'm afraid that you're going to be inundated with a number of emails in the near future about trying to schedule some of these things, and I look forward to those conversations. So if there's nothing else, is there any great progress anyone wants to tell us about? Sarah just joined us, so she's walking over to the phone, so hold on.
No, I just, hi, sorry I joined late. I don't know if Tatiana mentioned this, but we also met and discussed collaborating on a paper with neurobehavior and face. But also that, you know, I have been still trying to increase the data into the central repository, but not just in neurobehavior, but also in dysmorphology, brain, and 3D face to try to get all of the data that are out there into the central repository because otherwise, you know, we can't use it. So I was working pretty closely with Leah and Tatiana to get the 3D face data in there, and we're working on that, but just a plea to put any and all data into the database.
And, if the data's not in the database, there's nothing we can do about it. I like to walk into the site visit with the scads of data in there to be able to show them. There are some things I want to discuss with the Informatics Corps, but I can do that individually in terms of data analysis. Peter Hammond presented some really interesting, what I thought were interesting findings, using this new type of analysis based on gas diffusion. And our problem is I'm not sure we have the statistical expertise amongst our group to do that type of analysis, but I don't see any reason why what he was doing with facial images couldn't be done with brain images or behavioral data as well. And I thought it was an extremely interesting approach to analyzing clusters of similar data.
Leah's not on. Leah and I had a conversation. This is Sarah again. Leah and I had a conversation about this, and we have. She gave me some suggestions on where to look, and in terms of trying to figure out techniques to go in that direction.
So I don't know if the Informatics Corps has that type of statistical expertise available, but. Maybe when we have our conversation, that's something that'll come up.
We certainly have access to the software and the tools, and we can talk about what kind of expertise is needed to kind of walk people through doing these analytical routines.
Yeah, but it was pretty impressive that he could cluster these individual cases, and basically you need control data, and then you kind of link how close someone is to control a control case and how close they are to other cases of FASD. So it was pretty interesting. So, all righty. Well, then I hope everybody has a great week, and life goes good for all everybody. Any other issues, comments that we need to talk about? Claudia, how's your stuff coming along?
Oh yeah, it's coming along pretty well. I'm looking at time frequency analysis to look at the oscillations, and also beginning to do some graph analysis. And the pattern which seems to be emerging, I don't know if it's going to hold up on an individual subject basis, is that there are patterns of oscillatory activity in the cerebellum and controls, which aren't there in the FASD kids, and the their coherences, phase coherences between cerebellum and parietal cortex that are present in the controls, which aren't there in the FASD kids. And so it's sort of, and this is working across just the blinks that are present in the data, the conditioning data, and also the cued movement data. So it's kind of supporting this notion that there's some kind of a dysfunctional activation going on in the cerebellum, or a lack of activation in the cerebellum, and then that might be a structure that we might want to target for some kind of intervention.
Are there any MEG data on specificity? I mean, I know that you've collected as a result of this project, but in the literature or that you've seen in your lab, between the kids with FASD versus like ADHD or any other disorders?
I think you asked me that before, and I don't think that is really out there anywhere, but that's a very good question. And my feeling is that if you're not so much interested in diagnostics, but rather this is how these brains seem to work, and maybe they have some commonalities with other disorders, and you're really looking for an intervention, then it may not be so important if ADHD kids and FASD kids also have the same kinds of corticocerebellar dysfunctions, and you really want an intervention that works for both of them. That would be fine too.
Yeah, I think they're two different questions, equally important.
Yeah.
Do you see trying to convert this into a U? Do you have enough data, you think, now to convert it into a UO1 in the next 6 months?
UO1. I don't know. I'd have to take a look at that. I've never written a UO1, so I don't know what
like
we really need for
that. RO1. It's just an RO1.
It's a fancy kind of RO1? Yeah, for an RO1, I would think so. I don't know if we'll have anything published at that point. And the other thing I would like to mention is, while you guys were at the RSA, I was at the European Clinical Neurophysiology meeting in Rome, and I thought that there would be a couple of days when they would be talking about transcranial stimulation, which is another strong interest of mine. But actually, there were 5 days of talks on that subject, and it had pretty much taken over the meeting. So that I don't know how receptive NIH is now for towards transcranial stimulation as an intervention, but I'm personally going to be thinking along those lines in the future.
Okay. All righty. Any other comments anyone wants to make about what they're finding great or anything like that?
I have a question, Ed.
Yep.
Is Jennifer still collecting publications?
Jill?
Yeah.
What's your email, Jennifer?
Jill.
You can send it to Jill. Or actually, send it to both of us is fine. I'm at thomasb@mail.sdsu.edu if you wanted to shoot it that way, and then Jill and I can coordinate.
Say that again.
The email address?
Yes.
It's thomas3@mail.sdsu.edu.
Okay, thanks.
All righty, everybody. Take care. Have a good day, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Ed.
Bye, all.
Bye.